in-person podcast.
Yeah, I've done in-person.
Have you done an in-person podcast with champagne, though?
Ah!
There you go.
That's the difference. Exactly. Exactly. Cheers, guys.
Cheers.
Great to have you.
Thank you.
We're really excited to have you. Let's get on with it, Ben. Cheers. Let's do cheers. Another cheers. You're a proper one.
Cheers. So what made you guys decide to do a podcast?
So Ben and I have known each other for probably 7 or 8 years. I had a startup called Gridix, which is a real estate, like data analytics, really focused on zoning. And, you know, me and Ben have just stayed in touch. And then Ben was still in real estate a couple years ago. I had left Gridix and started a fitness product. And but I always knew I'd get back to real estate. I have my master's in real estate development, and you know, I went to UM, and so I was like, hey, you know, let's start. You know, Ben's like, hey, we should start a podcast. And so we really just started doing it for like shits and giggles. And we were doing it very sporadically, like, you know, once a month, once every 4 months, once every 6 months. So we're at Bureau right now, and our very first podcast was with Mike Feinstein from Bureau.
Oh, cool.
He's a friend of mine, and I was going to interview him for a blog, and he's like, well, if you decide to do a podcast, you can do it in any Bureau location. Have you ever been to Bureau?
No, this is super cool.
It's pretty cool, right?
Very cool.
Yeah. Mike was our first guest, and it was super convenient for us because then we could say, hey, you know, he's got 8 locations.
And help promote it.
Yeah. And so he's like, you know, you can use any Bureau whenever you want. So it really worked out beautifully. And so we've been doing this for about 2.5 years now. Ben and I joined Gridline Properties about 4 months ago. And so we have some great connections, and we'd love to learn from smart people that are a lot smarter than us. And, you know, what better way to get to know someone over, in this case, a little glass of champagne,
right?
We got a little Veuve Clicquot here with, Natasha.
There's always a reason to celebrate.
There's always a reason to celebrate. Always a reason to build a new friendship, over a nice glass of champagne or whatever our guests like to drink. But generally it's our guests that they choose the beverage, and, we supply the goods.
I love it.
Have to. We're very serious about our drinks.
I can tell.
You know, we like a proper cocktail.
Even the glassware is proper today.
Yeah, it is proper.
I'm very impressed.
My wife would kill me if she knew that I brought these. These are like Mexican champagne glasses. So
we'll thank her for me.
Yeah, I will. Hopefully she's not listening to this podcast. I don't think she listens to our shenanigans.
I got it.
Well, cool. So we generally start with a rolling start, Natasha, and then Ben edits it. But we're here with Natasha Falcone, founder and president of Falcone Capital. Thank you for joining us, Natasha.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm really looking forward to our chat.
Awesome. We first met coincidentally at a happy hour several months ago with a friend of yours, Beth Azor. And shout out to Beth because she then was on our podcast. I met her at this happy hour with Bob Knackle.
Yes.
And we got Beth on the podcast, and she's like, you need to talk to Natasha. So after our podcast, she's like, you know, here's 2 or 3 people you need to speak to. And you are at the top of her list. So.
She's awesome.
Yeah, she is awesome.
She's been, not only is she a partner of mine in many of our deals.
Oh, wow,
and
cool.
We'll talk about that. But she's a great friend too, which is what a great combination, right?
And how did you guys meet?
Well, I met her about, I want to say 20 years ago. When I was working in the shopping center world, I remember her. Not so much her remember me at that time, but when I went out on my own in 2019, I said, well, who should who should I meet in just the real estate world in general so that I could begin, you know, paving my journey? And a mutual friend of ours reconnected us. And we've been, you know, friends ever since.
Homies ever
since. Oh my gosh. Yes. Yeah. Yes. Big time. I love her to death. Yeah. She's an amazing human.
She is.
She's got some more energy than most people I know. That she just does not stop.
You are not kidding. In all aspects, business, helping people, wanting to make a difference. The conference that she puts on for women on an annual basis, which
just happened a couple of months ago.
It was life changing for me.
Yeah.
Life changing for me.
Well, it's like in what, the fourth or fifth year, and it keeps getting bigger.
It keeps getting bigger. Yeah. And her goal is to have more ladies investing in real estate.
That's awesome.
And she's doing it with that conference.
It really is kind of a male dominated, you know, business in a lot of ways. And so it's great to have role models like yourself and Beth, you know, kind of like leading the charge here for all the ladies that are in commercial real estate.
You know, I always like to say it's not one or the other. It's not men or women. We just need to gain the confidence to say, you know, we can have a seat at the table too. And so that's part of what we're trying to accomplish, which is let's show ladies that it's possible. You don't need to have a gazillion dollars to get involved in real estate. You know, you can.
So you don't have a gazillion dollars?
Not because I'm working on it.
Yeah, you're working on it.
A worthy goal.
I'm working on it. But you know, you can invest with 50, 100, and there are a lot of opportunities out there. And more than anything, it's surrounding yourself with people that are doing it, that want to be helpful, that will guide you to get involved and invest passively or actively, whatever it is that you enjoy.
So give us what's the elevator pitch of Falcone Capital? Like what do you guys do?
So what we do is we invest in specific markets in South Florida, and our goal is to improve the communities. So we take really crappy buildings and we make them nice for their residents. And at the same time, we provide great returns for our investors, long-term holders of real estate. And so we're not flippers and do not keep assets for a short, you know, 2-3 years. And then we believe in long-term 7-to-10-year hold minimum and really just make a difference and use that as the platform to do good and make money.
Do good and do well. That's what they
good.
Say.
Is that what they say? Do good and do
that's
well?
That's what I hear a lot of affordable housing developers saying.
Oh, I like it.
So you guys focus on multifamily buildings?
Multifamily. Hialeah and Little Havana is my focus.
Okay. Smaller size, like...
you know, it's...
What's the average unit size for you guys?
I get that question asked a lot. And what I like to show is that it's more geography. Because if you understand the market in Hialeah and Little Havana... You can have, I have a 30 unit building and there's an 8 unit right next door. I'd buy it.
Yeah, of course. Why not?
Right. Yeah. And then there's a duplex next to that. I'd buy that too.
Expand that footprint.
So it's more about geography than it is in reference to the size of the asset. Because I don't want to pinhole myself to say, well, we only buy 30 and up when maybe there's an 8 unit a block away from a property I already own.
Yeah. And that's really how you influence change in an area too, because you control effectively way more area that you can influence.
That's exactly right. And then, you know, beautify. So make it nice and have people feel like they're at home. And then obviously, you know, additional units makes a difference in when you consolidate them in an area.
Yeah. And it has a chain reaction with the neighbors too. People start seeing what you're doing and they kind of they're like, oh, maybe I'll redo our fence.
No question.
It's really cool.
And then just from a management point, property management point of view too, right? It's just easier to have that concentration. You know, if you're just in a specific neighborhood, you don't have to drive across town to fix that 2 unit and drive across town to fix the 8 unit.
That's also too, like economies of scale, right? Exactly. We have 4 buildings within 2 blocks in Little Havana, and that makes a big difference.
Yeah.
Back to the beginning.
Yeah.
Where were you born? Where did you grow up?
So I was born in New York, but I grew up.
Oh, yeah. All the good ones come out of New York.
But I grew up here. Yeah. I consider myself a Florida native because I've been here my whole life.
If you were born in New York, you're like...
That's like a thing.
you're just superior to others.
Everyone wants to pretend like they didn't come down from New York.
Exactly. Right.
They want the OG-ness of New York.
Right.
What part of New York?
Queens. I was born in Queens. All right. Yeah. And I live there. And then I came here when I was 5. So
Okay. So you're a certified
local. So you, yeah,
I'm a native.
Yeah, so
I'm
you really started gentrifying Miami at an early age.
I have a great idea at 5, yeah.
I came when I was 25-ish, so I've been gentrifying Miami now for a good 25 years now. Look at you. I've been doing my best.
Doing the work.
Doing the work. Someone's got to do it.
Someone has to. Oh,
those fake New Yorkers that came down here during the pandemic.
Trying to get out of the street,
right? I know, right?
Yeah. Oh, my goodness.
So,
where in Miami did you grow up?
In Hialeah.
Oh, Hialeah. Wow, okay.
In Hialeah. And so I went to school there. And
why did your parents come down here?
They just came to Florida.
And your parents are they Cuban?
They're Cuban. They got divorced and they both came down to Florida.
Yeah.
And so beyond that, we are just here. And I guess a lot of Latins came down, you know, they started in, I'm first generation American. So they started somewhere else and many Cubans made their way down to Miami. And then that's what happened to us.
Because there was a big Cuban migration that went up to New York and then New Jersey as well, right?
That's true.
And then the smart ones are like, what the fuck are we doing over here? We're freezing our asses off. Like,
everybody's in Miami. Yeah, let's go.
Let's go.
Exactly. And so that's basically it. And then I fast forward to going to school here and then studied accounting.
Were you an entrepreneur growing up as a kid? Did you show did you have that entrepreneurial, did you start businesses or lemonade stands or anything like that?
I actually did not realize I was an entrepreneur till I was in my 40s.
I'm the same way. I didn't even want to think about money. I just wanted to go snowboarding.
I was always thinking about money. Okay. All the contrary. I was working for others and others' businesses and running other people's businesses. And I didn't know I had this entrepreneurial way of being, but I was doing it for others. And then I realized, wait a minute. And what are we doing here? And that's the end of the story, where in 2019, I started my own company. But I never realized when I would go work somewhere, I started off, I was working in accounts payable. And I was like, well, I want to learn every department. I want to understand how the whole company works. I want to be efficient and I want to just learn how things work. Well, that was the beginning. And I didn't even realize that's what I was doing, that I was learning how to run organizations. I was learning how to run companies. And then, but I became an accountant.
What was your first job?
My first job.
High school is also included in this.
Yes. My first job was, I worked at Barnett Bank. I was a proof operator.
How old were you?
I was 16, 15.
So well,
I take it back. I was, and again, I'm dating myself for sure, which I, in the summers, I was running airplane, tickets. So before, now you do it online, before a travel agent would print them and they had to take them to your office. So I actually worked for my uncle in the summers. And I would be the one that would take the tickets in downtown Miami. They would get printed and I was the one going into all the buildings and dropping them off at it. So that's courier, office worker. And then I went to work at a bank.
So you were hustling at a young age.
I wanted money. I wanted to make money. Yeah. And so that's what, and we needed money.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. But then when it came time to figure out what I wanted to do, when you grow up, the options were accounting, doctor, engineer, accountant, lawyer. I don't know if I said that, but there's four or five careers that make you successful, supposedly.
Yeah.
I didn't know I could do what I'm doing now. So I took a class in college in accounting and I said, damn, I could do this. And so I became an accountant.
What do you love more, champagne or Excel spreadsheets?
Oh, well, champagne, but man, I love these Excel spreadsheets. That's awesome. So I became an accountant and went to work for one of the large firms. And here is where I discovered real estate, because I was assigned to the real estate tax department.
Sounds so boring.
I didn't know this was a thing. Sounds so
so boring.
And I'm so excited.
Real estate tax department.
Oh my God. Yeah. That's so fun and fabulous.
Spoken like a true accountant.
So I worked there for a few years and then went to work for one of my clients that owned and developed shopping centers. And they also develop condos.
And this was Tobin Properties?
Yes.
And you were there for 16 years.
Yeah, 16 years.
That's a long stretch.
I started as a controller and I left as the president of the company.
How long were you president for?
Probably about half. Maybe.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah. And so you started as controller. Did you go into leasing? Were you doing, you did it all.
You know, what I mentioned before is like, I learned every department. Yeah. I learned everything. Operations was one of my strengths. So created a lot of efficiencies and improvements in the organization. And it's what I loved to do. And so in all of those steps, all of the businesses I worked in and working with that family and in developing and running their properties, I realized, you know, you see a lot.
So they were developing their own properties too. Ground
at the
control.
Time, at the time that I was with them, where they basically owned a portfolio and weren't developing, but you know, we started a construction division, started a leasing division, third party, and so there were a lot of different things that were happening that I was a part of.
Yeah, what a great experience, huh?
Fabulous experience.
You got to see it all.
I saw it all, and it was just wonderful to be able to be a part of it. But like everything, in 2019 is when I said, you know, it's time for me to start doing things for my own family. And that's when I decided that, and with my husband's help, actually, because he's the one that actually pushed me and said, you know, you've been doing this in your career for, 20 something years between the real estate accounting background and working.
And for the record, he's not your better half, right?
My he is.
Is he?
So he's the one that encouraged me to start the company.
Was he ever in real estate or no?
No.
No?
No.
Okay. He just saw how much you had learned and the experience that you had.
And yeah, and the opportunity.
Everything anyway.
And the opportunities that were available, that could become available to us and have.
When you were at Tobin Properties, where you were involved in everything, I mean, acquisitions, yeah. Dispositions, everything. Like everything.
Yeah.
So right. The perfect training ground.
Estate planning, because it was a family business, you know, not my family, but it was estate planning, acquisitions, dispositions, running of property management, all of it, operations.
And they were multifamily properties or all kinds of?
That was done before I got there. And at the beginning, we sold one of the apartment buildings that they had. So there was some dabbling in that as well.
So they had a bunch of different types of asset class.
Yes.
Yeah, so you learned everything you needed to know.
Yeah, exactly.
More or less.
Exactly.
So when you finally quit, did you feel ready to quit? What did it feel like you...
You never feel ready for a change. So when it was time for you know, my transition into deciding, at first I was like, you know what, I'm going to take time off and I'm not going to do anything. I've been working since I'm 14 years old. I'm going to take a break.
And you did this, you have children?
I do.
How many kids?
Two boys, 20 and 22.
Super mom crushing it.
Crushing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're awesome.
Yeah.
They're awesome. And so I said, I'm going to take time off. And they were teenagers, I think. But yeah, by then. And I'm just going to be, well, that didn't last very long. I need to do something. So then that's when I started determining what it is. And that was about 2017 or 18. And that's when I decided that I wanted to get into multifamily.
So you quit Tobin in what year?
I think it was 2016 or 17. And then I did some consulting.
Okay.
And then I decided I did some, it's something that I think is really important to talk about is fear. I did not start my company sooner because I didn't think I could, which is what we talked about at the beginning, right? Like letting people know or letting other ladies know that it's possible to invest in real estate and it's possible to have a business or invest passively or actively, however it is, but to get involved. I didn't think I could do it. I had the skills.
Yeah.
We had money to invest. I had the skills to do it and I didn't do it right away. I dabbled in it. We had a house. I had a few condos. But didn't really dive in until 2019. And that's when my husband said, okay, like, go do it for real. And that's when I took off.
It sounds like he wanted you out of the house. He's like, you got to start working.
No, all the contrary. The contrary.
So that was a send. I mean, yeah. Like, let's go for it.
That's awesome.
It really was. And that's when I started buying multifamily properties in Hialeah and Little Havana.
And why did you decide multifamily?
Well, when I mentioned that we had a house that we renovated, during this time, I was renovating a house, and I was there every day with the contractor and the electrician and the plumber and putting up the cabinets, and I was there every day. When we were done, one of the workers that was very active in the project said to me, "You know what? I want to rent this house. I've been in this project. You've done, you know, it's so beautiful. I want to rent it." I'm like, the passion that I saw, or the like, what I saw in this person that wanted to actually rent this house that I did, was like, oh my God, this feeling was amazing. Well, yeah. He lived there like 4 or 5 years, ended up having a family. He left because he ended up buying his own home. But that moment, that feeling, I was like, okay, this is what I need to get into. And so before I am so, now I'm so specific about the markets and the fact that it's multifamily, but when that happened, I was like, okay, I'm doing residential. I'm going to buy homes. I'm going to buy duplexes. I'm going to buy fourplexes. And if you would have asked me then, well, where are you going to invest? I'm like, well, I invest in South Florida. I'll buy an eightplex. I'll buy a duplex. I'll buy a house. Well, you say that to anyone, they're like, okay, well, how do I market to this person? South Florida, yeah. That doesn't. And so I learned that one of the important things, and I think a piece of advice that I like to give is that you should pick your area, like pick an area and become really familiar with it so that you can actually grow in that specific place. Like now I invest in Hialeah and Little Havana, and I know those markets really well, and I can act quickly in those two markets.
Why did you pick those two markets? You know, Ben and I are big fans of Little Havana, but I want to get your why Little Havana? What do you see in Little Havana that is like, I want to invest in here, and Hialeah as well.
I believe that they're similar markets as far as the immigrant community is concerned. And I lived in Hialeah in the apartments that now I renovate, not the same exact ones, but I lived in places that were really crappy. Uh-huh. And so going in and being able to make a change to these buildings and fix for someone else in the place that I used to live. So I lived there with my mom, and we couldn't afford anything. We couldn't afford much, I should say. And so, but when we needed to renovate something needed to be renovated, we had to do it ourselves. Yeah. Nobody was coming to fix anything.
The landlord wasn't doing shit for you.
No, but, and so I decided that I was going to do it different. Yeah. And so many of the residents that we have are people that just got here from other countries, and then they just need a good place to live where they can start their lives. And so that's why I picked those two markets.
And how does that influence you on the capitalist side of you? Or like, we got to make a good return. I want to help these people out, but we got to charge rents that give us this, you know, this IRR or whatever your target metrics are. How do you balance those two things?
They're not mutually exclusive. You can do them both.
Right.
You provide good places to live. People will pay the market rents if they are living in a safe, nice place. They know that they can be there a long time, and we're going,
especially if they have kids, right? Like, yeah, you know, it's got to be some place you got to bring home to your kids
that you
right?
feel good yeah. about. You know, you're working, you know, I don't know, 8 to 12 hours, who knows, yeah. and you come home and you want to be somewhere nice, and you could do both. It is possible to renovate something and make it nice and still make good returns. It's possible.
No, I totally agree. It's just, it's amazing how rare that is. How it just takes giving a little bit of a shit to pick this design change instead of this design change. It doesn't necessarily cost more, but you cared.
That is exactly right.
It's amazing how rare you find
you,
that.
You take a little bit of extra time and you can find a stone countertop that's not that much more money 100%. Than putting laminate. And actually, it works to your advantage because many of the finishes or things that we put in, it's not that they cost more, it's that we just take exactly what you're saying, take a little more time and they last longer. So long term, it's a benefit.
Yeah.
So how did you do your first deal? The first one?
Multifamily.
Yeah. You're like, I'm starting Falcone Capital. We have X dollars. How did you find it and capitalize it and execute?
Okay. So the first deal, when I bought it, I was buying all over South Florida. I didn't have my markets specific. Oh. So that building's in Miami Beach,
nice.
Actually. And I was sitting at an event.
Where in Miami Beach?
It's in North Beach, like okay. 70, it's like 73rd. It's on a little island on 73rd and a few blocks from Collins Avenue. And it's an 8-unit building. Same thing, not great. Renovated it and fixed it. And now it's performing fabulously. But how did I find it? I was at an event that a girlfriend invited me to. And
this isn't Beth's event, is it?
No, it was a crew networking event here in Miami. Cool. And
can you talk about Crew a little bit real quick? What is it?
It is commercial. I always mess up the acronym, but it's basically women in real estate.
Commercial real estate. Women? Is that what it is?
I don't know what the E is for, but commercial. Yes.
But it's a local organization.
It's a nationwide organization. Yeah. So Crew is a nationwide organization, and it's basically an organization of women that are in real estate, but it's not only brokers or investors. It's anybody that's in real estate. There's lawyers, there's brokers, there's engineers, there's insurance, there's everything. And so anyone that's involved in builders, anyone that's involved in the real estate world can be a part of this network. So I wasn't involved in the organization, but my friend, which was very active in the Miami chapter, invited me to attend this event, and next to me sat a broker, another friend of hers. And so we chatted up, we're talking, and I'm like, yes, I'm looking for properties all over South Florida. And she's like, well, I have a property. And okay, so I go look at it. And I'm like, and I'm not buying a property on Miami Beach. I don't know why I said that. I had no...
I think everybody says that.
Yeah, maybe that's why I said it. But I had no reason to... Like, if you would have asked me, I would have had no logic to that. And... So I did the underwriting. I'm like, oh, it's okay, but I don't invest in Miami Beach. But my husband's like, let's go look at it. So I go back with him and he goes, you need to buy that.
That's awesome.
And I'm like, okay. So we were able to do a deal, and the numbers worked, and so we bought it, and we still own it today.
Let's talk a little bit about the deal, right?
I want to hear numbers.
Okay. So this is 2019.
I bought this in 2020.
Okay, 2020. Eight units. So North Miami Beach.
Eight units. North Beach.
It's North Beach.
North Miami. It's North
Beach. Two very different cities. Let's be clear on that.
It's Miami Beach, but it's different than what everyone knows on TV as to what Miami Beach is, if you're not from South Florida.
So eight units. How much did you pay for it?
So I paid $150 a unit.
Okay.
So I think 1.2, I believe.
What was the cap rate on it?
And I bought it at about a 6.
Okay.
I turned it into a 9, and we still own it.
Nice.
And the money for the down payment, was that just money you had saved over time?
Yeah.
Oh, so you guys just went in solo.
We just went in solo and went for it.
What was the lender?
So here's another good lesson, a mistake that I made. Is that I put permanent financing on it before I, before I renovated and actually increased rents and what have you. So we have a super low, the rate is great. It's 3.5 or 3.3 for 10 years.
That's amazing.
But I'm at like 40% loan to value.
Right.
But you know, it's fine. Yeah. I'm not refinancing, and the equity will sit there. And when it's time to refinancing, we will, and we'll put that money to work for us again on another deal.
So if you put perm on the front end, how did you finance the capital improvements?
That was part of the equity. Yes.
So this is
just a property. You didn't bring any other investors in.
No.
This is just you and your husband.
Yes.
And so you paid $190 a door, you said?
$150 a door.
$150 a door.
Yeah.
All right. And how much in renovations?
Probably spent, because we did the windows. So we did the windows and doors impact. You know, we painted the building, we fixed the parking lot, and we did a couple of the units were nice. And so we renovated five of them. So I probably spent like $300,000.
Okay.
Between the windows and doors, and we had to do the roof. So there were enhancements, and then just stuff you have to do.
Of course. And so that's a long-term hold for you guys. That's just cash flowing and you're happy with it.
That is a long-term hold for us. Absolutely.
And you said you boosted it to like now it's a 9 cap based on what you spent all in?
Based on what we spent and the rents and
that's
what
amazing.
Have you. Yeah.
And you're at 40%. So you got no...
Exactly.
No reason to sell.
No, we're not. We're not selling. It's a really good property. Even though Miami Beach is not my market, we're holding on to that.
Did you ever figure out why you didn't want to buy in Miami Beach?
No.
Have
you bought more in Miami Beach? No.
No. Yeah. Yes.
Oh, you have?
Yeah. The building next door.
Okay. Nice. Well, that makes sense though, right?
but Miami Beach is not my market, and it's not where, but how do you not buy the building
next door?
Next door.
Yeah. Got it. Are these waterfront?
Yeah. No.
Not waterfront.
They're not waterfront.
Okay. Interesting. So was that your business plan in the beginning? Was just to use your own money and just keep growing it? did you, was there a, what was the next deal? Did you just keep doing the same thing? Or?
So we bought that building, and then we bought a building in Hialeah, an all studio building, which I didn't want to buy either because I don't buy studios. Again, I had no reason for that. I was just, sometimes you say things or you really don't deep dive, or at least you don't realize. And my husband said, why not? That's a great building. Let's buy it. So we bought the building. And what's ended up happening with that building, which is super interesting, is that it has become a funnel for our other properties. Because someone comes in, they move into a studio apartment. They're there for about a year or so, and they call me, and they say, okay, we're going to move because we need something bigger. And I'm like, well, I have something for you. I'll let you out of your lease if you move into our other building.
That's amazing.
And then they do. So we get to keep the resident, and they get to move into something way nicer than they would somewhere else.
With a landlord that wasn't an asshole.
Which a nice landlord. That cares.
That's amazing.
Exactly. So we did that, going back to your question. So we did that, and then I bought one more, which is the one in Little Havana. So now we have a few properties that we've owned on that we own on our own, and realize, well, wait, how am I able to do two things? How am I able to grow the portfolio, continue making an impact on the communities? And then that's when I decided that I was going to begin syndicating. And so I continued doing what I was doing. By now, I'm looking at Hialeah and Little Havana. I'm trying to figure out these two markets and what areas of those areas, like those specific markets, I want to be in. And I began syndicating the next deal.
So let's dumb this down for Ben a little bit. Talk to us about syndication. What does that mean?
So in my case, syndication is when, so what I've done is you, as a GP, as a general partner, or a syndication has GPs and a GP and an LP. And the LPs invest passively with the GP, and the GP finds the asset and does all the work. And the LP, like Beth likes to say, gives a check and gets a check.
Yep.
So,
and how hard is it to find these LPs? Is it conferences, or where did you source your first batch of LPs from?
Well, the first one was friends and family. So the first one was property.
Let's talk about your syndication.
First syndication.
Yeah.
And so first one, I have this property. I'm like, oh, this is great. I'm going to syndicate it. I reach out to, I don't know, six people, five of them say yes. And I'm like, this is so easy.
It's like stealing candy from a baby.
Wow.
These suckers.
This is so easy. And so it's friends and family. So that's how I raise for my syndication.
And so where was this asset, and how much did you pay for it?
This one is in Little Havana. Uh-huh. That was 165 a unit, 18 units.
Okay. But so you're getting bigger.
And get bigger. The opportunity was there.
Yeah.
And we're not done renovating that property yet, because we did buy it with issues with the city. And so we're working through that.
What was the going in cap rate when you bought it?
That actually was like a four, I believe, or a four and a half. By now, we're in 2022 now. So it was about 4.5.
Okay.
And that, when we're, that's going to be seven, eight.
Got it. With some CapEx.
With CapEx. That's correct.
And how heavy are these CapEx improvements?
Same thing.
Okay.
Windows, doors, kitchen cabinets.
And is the building vacant during these improvements, or do you do it phased? How do you?
It's like playing Tetris.
Yeah.
So you have the residents as they are. You fix the things that need immediate repair for them. And sometimes when you come in, they're very weary about who the new landlord's going to be. Oh, my rents are going to go up, and what's going to happen, and are they going to kick us out? So there's always one or two people that leave, or you buy the building with a vacancy. And as soon as they start seeing that you're renovating and what you're offering, and that they can actually have the opportunity to live there, then it just works. It just works.
So they're okay with the increase in rents.
Yeah, they shop.
Yeah.
They shop, and then they see, well, wait a minute, I can stay where I like being.
Yeah.
And I get a nicer unit. I see that this landlord is taking care of the property, or in the process of improving it. And so they stay. And I would say that the majority of our residents end up staying. We do have people that leave, obviously, but the majority of them stay.
And how much is the rent increase for them, like typically on something
just,
like that?
You know, it varies. It's not, I can't say, well, it's always X.
No, sometimes, of course. But what's the, it's like 30% increase?
You know, we bought a building where it was almost 100%.
Oh, wow.
Because the people had been living there for 20 years or so, and the rent was, you know, there was no mortgage, and the rents were never increased. And then, you know, sometimes it's $100. Sometimes some units maybe are not increased at all because they bumped them up. So it's all over the place.
And did the people with 100% increases, did some of them stay just because it was such a different product now? It was kind of like, it's worth it.
Actually, in that building, that's a 30-unit building, 50% of the people stayed.
That's amazing.
That's a lot. I thought that was a lot when it's...
For 100% increase.
Yeah, so they enjoyed the low rents as long as they could. And I think that's great if that was the opportunity that was put in front of them. And when they, I'm sure, shopped what we were offering against where they were going to go, it made sense for them to stay.
And where do you put them in the meantime while you're renovating their unit? Just in another unit?
Oh, no, you move them as you go. So one is vacant, you move them. Now that one's vacant, and then you move someone to the new unit. And
that makes sense.
And so so it's great. And then that way you're also have revenue while you're renovating. And you're not displacing so many people at the same time.
That's awesome. So you're, 5 years now into the Falcone Capital?
Yes.
How many buildings have you bought?
I have 7 buildings, 103 units.
It's like a building a year, a little bit more.
Yeah, I haven't bought anything this year yet. It's been difficult to find
that's
anything.
What everyone keeps saying. As brokers, we're kind of like, we need to start transacting. It's,
you're not kidding. It's crazy. You're not kidding. And I'm ready. But it's not, it's just, you know, not.
It's hard to find deals.
It's hard to find deals. I think there's still a disconnect with buyers and sellers, but it'll, you know, patience is what works.
And what is there like a triggering factor that makes you buy something? I guess now you can't really buy at 4 caps going in because debt's so much more expensive, right?
Yeah, it just depends. I mean, one thing that helps is seller financing. It's that I have a few of the buildings that have seller financing, and that has helped as in because of the rate, because of the interest only factor and things like that.
And how do you deal with seller financing when you're doing CapEx improvements? Do they subordinate or do you get like mezz debt for the improvements or you just use equity?
No, I use equity.
Got it.
I use equity. But in reference to the financing, I think I don't like to say that I wouldn't buy something in a 4 cap because if I know I can turn it into a 7, a 6 or a 7, with conservative underwriting, I'd buy it.
That makes sense. Yeah, why not?
Yeah.
But just hard to find deals these days.
So. It's hard to find anything that you can buy at a certain cap rate and then turn it into something else right now. Yeah.
And so what was the last deal you bought? Was it 2023?
In 2023 was the last deal, which was the one that's in Miami Beach next to the other one.
Full circle.
Yeah.
Buttoned it up.
That's true. I didn't think of it that way. You're right. You're right. But hopefully the circle's still open and I could buy something this year.
Would you ever consider other markets or are you pretty hardcore on Little Havana? And
I don't want to say never, but I am hardcore on Little Havana and Hialeah.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much opportunity in both those markets. We always talk about how dense they are, just the concentration of everything.
I mean, there's so much multifamily in Little Havana.
There's good zoning there.
Yes.
I'm not as familiar with Hialeah, but the concentration and density in Little Havana is insane. It's one of the densest probably areas in the entire country. You know, I mean, not clearly like New York City and South Beach are very dense, but I mean, the rest of the country is not as dense as Little Havana is. I mean, you have 6-plexes and 12-plexes and, you know, 30-plexes all in like a two square mile area.
Exactly.
And that just makes the density so, so great there.
It's a great place. And it's great. And
walkable. There's commercial right there.
Good transportation, commercial, decent schools. Like it's all there.
Yeah.
Have you done any ground up projects yet?
I have not.
Are you interested in that? Or you think there's so much opportunity in renovating existing buildings?
I like the renovating of existing buildings, but I don't like to say I would pass up an opportunity if it presented itself in the future?
Of course. But it seems like the acquisition and
the strategy,
the value add of existing
value add
easier.
Yes.
And you can turn it around a lot quicker.
100%.
With the syndication deals, do you get any pressure from LPs to sell these things? Is there a certain, has it altered your time horizon on investing, or are they all on board with the long term?
I believe that as a GP, it's super important to be really transparent and very clear with those that are trusting you with their money and their investments. So upfront, I let everyone know that's long-term hold. I've had people tell me, no, I'm not going to do it because of whatever reason. I don't want long-term hold. And I have other plans. Yeah, it could be age. It could be family planning, whatever it is. And I respect that. But so yes, I've had rejection because of my strategy, but that's just part of it.
I think it's a great strategy. I mean, when you hold for longer, you build the buildings in a better way. Obviously, they're higher quality because you're thinking of OpEx during the time you're holding them. You're like, I'm going to be holding this, so I don't want to put in a cheap fan here when I, you know, when I could. So,
I don't believe in fixing the property to sell it. Exactly. I've fixed the property and I want to enjoy it.
Yeah.
I want to be the one to reap the benefits and the rewards of having a nice asset.
Yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. When you're syndicating, have the return requirements changed at all from when you started to now, in terms of, has the goalpost been moved in terms of deal metrics that people look for? Like, has the IRR gone up now that interest rates have gone up? What's the hurdle with?
I mean, my last deal was a year ago, so right. I can't tell you today about any pushback or anything of that nature. I think that there are, or there could be, opportunities out there where the IRRs will be at a place that will make sense, because if you're a long-term holder, it's a different return than if you're basically betting against interest rates, which is why so many people did so well in free money. So if you're flipping and like, oh, we've got these 20, 30, 40, 30% IRR. Well, yeah. How do you replicate that? I'm a slow and steady, in my opinion. Make sure that you're delivering the returns that you're promising. Make sure that you over deliver, but under promise and over deliver. But those crazy returns from before, I think most investors know that doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we fight with, I'm developing a building too, and the problem is the risk-free rate is so high now. You can get 5% of your money and put it in a treasury.
Right.
So we got to outpace that for investors.
Exactly.
Enough for investors to be excited. And that's hard to do today. It's not easy.
100% it's hard. I don't know when I have my next opportunity what'll happen there. We'll have to see.
We'll bring you a deal. We'll find out.
Yeah. But in reference to the past and my current partners, I think one of the important things is to make sure you communicate the good and the bad, send pictures, write emails, let them know what's going on at all times, whether it's good or bad. And I've had, have really great relationships with all of them because of that.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's super key.
And I imagine that you have a lot of the investors invest in other deals, right? They're
like in other of my deals,
yeah.
You're saying? Yes.
Yeah.
Like, for example, Beth is in all my syndications. And I have many and many others like her that are in several of opportunities. And then I have some that have said no for whatever, yes, I like this one, but I can't do this one at this time.
What's the minimum that that an investor can put into one of your deals?
It varies per deal, but it's been as low as 25.
Okay.
And how many LPs do you normally have in a deal?
It varies. The first one was only 5.
Okay.
And then another one had 20.
Wow.
And so it varies per opportunity and how quickly we are able to raise funds.
Is there any difference between 5 or 20 managing all the people, or is it kind of the same? Everyone jumps on a call X number of times a year, or how do you manage those relationships?
I send communication and I speak to everyone pretty regularly.
And you raise money like on a PPM, or is it a...
Yeah. I mean, I send out an OM, and then we have a PPM. I have a software that I use to manage all of that. And I speak to, I've never done a call with everybody on the call.
Right.
I speak to everybody individually.
Yeah.
It's probably better.
I don't know. Recently I've been given the advice, do a call. And I'm like, okay. But I like, I think both work.
Totally.
Yeah.
Both work.
when you're, I'm just coming back to the deals, when you're underwriting deals and you're looking at adding value and you think you can take the rents from a 4 to a 6, do you just look at other buildings in the area that are, have been renovated, that are achieving those higher rents? How do you kind of show investors, I'm going to hit this higher rent number once we renovate this? Is that just rent comps in the area?
Well, I do my rent comps myself, because you really have to understand the immediate market that you're in. Because most of the residents in your area, in at least in the markets that I'm in, want to stay in that general area. So they're not moving, you know, more than half a square mile. They want to stay there because either they work nearby, their transportation is a scooter or public transportation. So I check the rents. First thing I do is I check rents myself, all the high end, the low end, and see everything.
In MLS, or what do you look at?
I call.
You call?
Yeah. Okay. I call, I drive by, I get out of my car. Is there anything for rent here? I'm interested in moving in.
Interesting.
And so MLS, like I mix it up and then I always under, so let's say the rents are supposed to be 2000. I will underwrite them at 1800, because if the market softens, then I'm in good shape.
And you want to be able to lease them up quick.
And that too.
Yeah.
And that too.
How many people are on your team?
In my immediate team, we're 3. And then I have, you know, contractors and electricians and plumbers and everything else.
So what are the other positions in your team?
So I have a handyman that works exclusively with me and on our properties. And then I have an accounting operations person that works with me as well.
Super small.
I was checking your Twitter and I saw you were out with a big ring of keys picking up final rent checks from tenants.
No, that's when we bought the property.
Oh, when you bought the property.
Yes.
Well, and I saw one with the air conditioner that was like floating in the hole in the wall.
Oh, you saw that one too? Yeah. I know.
I just love that was funny. You were out in the trenches, because we always find ourselves in the weirdest places in real estate. It's always like adventures in commercial real estate. You're always in like just funny situations when you're out there in the weeds.
I think as a general partner and as a sponsor of any real estate opportunity, you need to know your properties. You need to know what's going on. You need to drive your properties. You need to visit them at different times. You need to understand your tenant mix. Make sure, you know, if I wouldn't have shown up, maybe when would we have seen that air conditioning? It may have stayed like that all weekend. We don't know, you know, so we saw it and we had to act fast. So those are the kinds of things that I think it's important to know your property and really be familiar with it as a GP.
And for the listeners, there's a picture of an in-wall AC unit without, what do you call
the trim?
Like the bellows around the side or something.
What happened was, is that there was an AC that fit the exact dimensions of the hole. When the resident left, that resident had purchased that air conditioning themselves from back when it was the previous landlord. So when they left,
they took it with
them. They said, you know what, I paid for this, I'm taking it with me. So they took it with them, and then they just brought something not to leave the hole vacant.
but the one they brought was way smaller.
And the one that they brought was probably like 8 inches smaller and around all the three, you know, the sides, which was kind of funny.
A lot of natural light coming in that wall.
Exactly. Yeah, it's amazing. Exactly.
Anything else you've seen like that that's been a shock to you?
Yeah, I mean, you're a lifelong Miamian. What's the craziest shit you've seen in Miami?
Oh, okay, well, it happened to me. So in one of our properties, I get a call from a resident that there was a fire. So of course I freaked out. This is the first time this happens to me. And I'm like, oh my God, what do you mean there's a fire? So I said, but call the fire department. So the fire department comes out. By the time I get there, I open the door. It was in one of the studios, and I look from the door, and when you open the door, there's a window right in the back. And I look straight and I see this red thing. And I'm like, what the hell? What is this? So there's this fire, like everything is black. The bed is black. The kitchen is black. And I look and I'm like, I walk in and I'm like, of course there's a fire. There's a barbecue in the window. So I go around to say, okay, I'm getting rid of this thing. So I go around and remove the barbecue out of the window because the window's open. The barbecue is basically, imagine yourself opening a window and then sticking your body out to, not even sticking your body, sticking your arms out of the window to move the charcoal and make your steak. So the apartment caught fire.
That's some real MacGyver shit.
No, and then it was attached. Here's the best part. When I tried to remove it, you know, the fire happened. Luckily, nothing else happened except that unit their stuff got damaged, they had attached it to the window, so I couldn't remove it. And I'm like, what? I mean, I'm a little strong. I could move a little barbecue. And then I figured out they had bolted it into the window.
For safety. Listen,
when you got a grill, you got a grill, right? Yeah,
exactly. So to me, that is like a crazy, crazy story.
Well, you caught it in time.
Thank goodness.
And where was the resident that was grilling? They went to take a shower.
Yeah, who knows what was going on? Because I'm like, well, how does the fire get all the way to the front of the unit? But, you know, I stopped asking questions and luckily we resolved it.
That's amazing. So what's next? I mean, once you find a deal, I guess, you know, we're looking for deals that make sense. Anything that you specifically targeting next for Falcone Group? Do you have a certain hurdle or targets in mind?
Yeah, I heard on one of the podcasts I was listening to that, you know, you went in, I want 40 units. And Beth is like, no, you're doing 100. So you're at 100 now. Like, what's the goal now?
You know, the target.
And you did 100 in that year.
I did 100 in that year. You know, the target keeps moving. I'd love to, you know, double the size of our portfolio and more, and then kind of go from there. I don't have a target where we say, okay, when we get here, we're done. But right now, I would love it if we can double the size of the portfolio. I would say that would be the next target. And continue doing what I'm doing in looking for opportunities and speaking to people that are interested in investing and believe in, find people that believe in what I'm doing and that want to be a part of it and invest and make nice returns.
Are you seeing people want to put capital into the Little Havana market?
Oh, I believe so.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, I believe so. I mean, finding money is not the issue.
Yeah,
it's finding the issue is finding the deals. Yeah. Exactly.
Well, maybe we can help you with that.
Yeah, hopefully we can.
I would love it.
Felipe and I were out on our bikes last week. I blew out my tire. We were knocking on doors looking for deals.
Oh, that's awesome.
Cruising Little Havana.
Yeah. That's how you do it.
Block by block.
Great way to get to know the neighborhood, right?
It really is.
Pulling my terrible gringo Spanish out. Yeah.
So find me a deal, guys.
We're on it.
Well, cool. If anyone wants to get in touch with you, Natasha, how do they get a hold of you?
So I'm very active on Instagram and Twitter.
All right.
So I'm Nat Falcone, NatFalconi. So you can DM me and reach out to me there. And any questions about investing in multifamily, it'd be my pleasure to chat.
Cool. Any interesting events that you're going to be attending soon?
I don't have
summer's kind of dead here.
Yeah, I'm not actually I'm going to be in September. I will be at a conference reconvene, and it's a capital conference, but besides that, I don't have any other plans.
Okay.
Nice.
Not yet.
What are you doing this summer?
I'm doing it.
Miami?
Yeah.
You're going to sit here in the sweltering heat all Miami?
Yeah.
You're not going to go to the Cuban Alps? You know where the Cuban Alps are, right?
Where is that?
It's the mountains of North Carolina.
Oh, well.
Supposedly it became the Cuban Alps because the Miamis would leave here and the first mountains they found was North Carolina. So, well, and that's where they've all settled.
I have to say I love Asheville.
Yeah. See, that's the Cuban Alps right there.
Yeah. We get out there very frequently. Yeah. So, but I love the fall. I love the fall up there.
It's the best.
Yeah. Asheville's pretty killer. Yeah.
It really is. Lots to do.
Cool. All right, Natasha. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. Thanks for all the questions and the deep dive. This was really, really awesome. Yeah, and I love spending time with you guys, and I love the champagne.
Awesome. And, you know, thanks for sharing your story. I hope it serves as an inspiration for others you know, you can start small and then grow into something big, right? Like, you don't have to come out of the gates on fire, right? Like,
that's,
you start
right
with your first deal and you slowly build that up.
That's the goal. I mean, if anyone takes one thing away from this, is that it's possible.
Yeah, I mean, in five years, you have 100 units already.
That's exactly right.
That's amazing.
Just keep swimming.
Yeah.
That's right.
Love it.
Thank you, guys.
Cheers.
Awesome.
Have a great afternoon, Natasha. Thank you.
Thank you.